The Baseball Today podcast is presented by Travelocity. Travelocity's new top secret hotels makes Travelocity.com the best place for hotel deals. This is Baseball Today.
First and foremost, I'm a baseball player.
Baseball's a funny game. There's a round ball that comes in a square box.
And then I ended up getting up and talking. I started to really get going, and I had to kind of cut myself off.
I know the fans are great. You know, this is where I wanted to be from day one.
Play ball!
Baseball Today.
Hi there, welcome to the Baseball Today. It's Tuesday, April 13th, 2010. Have you gotten your taxes in yet? I'm Eric Carabell, behind the glass, Jay Soderbergh. And lots to get to on today's show. We'll talk about Monday's great games. The Padres score more runs than the Astros have scored all season. And it's getting worse, by the way, for the Astros. Some injuries, Aaron Hill in the DL, Jimmy Rollins we'll talk about. We'll take your emails as well, and we'll preview Tuesday's show. But now we're going to bring in our special guest. This is ESPN.com senior writer Rob Nyer, off a good night's sleep. Rob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Aaron.
Now, really, you don't get any good night's sleeps, do you? Because, I mean, we see you tweeting at 4 a.m., and that's, what, is that our time or local time? And then, you know, you're up a couple hours later, and you're chatting, and you're writing. Do you ever sleep?
I usually do. I haven't figured out the schedule yet for the baseball season. I think I forget how to live during the season, during the off season, and I got to figure something out. But it'll work out.
Well, it's a long season. Pace yourself. I mean,
yes, I was telling somebody last night that if I don't, if I'm not careful, I'm going to collapse before the All-Star break.
Yeah, you don't want to be Paula Duca of the media world and run out of gas in June.
No.
Okay, 1 week down, 7 games for most teams. Top of your head, best team you've seen that surprises you, worst team, I guess maybe Houston, but what have you seen so far that's shocked you?
Well, Eric, I'm probably like you. Nothing. It's really hard to shock me in early April. The A's have been a little better than I expected. The Mariners have been worse than most people expected, I suspect. And of course, you know, when you have a team with no wins, a week plus into the season, that's probably the biggest story.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I'm glad you said it that way. You know, you can't be too shocked early on. Certainly a team that hasn't won more than a week into the season, like the Houston Astros, is one thing. You know, San Francisco off to a good start, Oakland. So by the Bay, some good baseball being played there. Back to the Astros for a second here. How bad do you think it is? I mean, obviously this is a team that wasn't supposed to contend before the season, but you lose Lance Berkman. You got Hunter Pence and Carlos Lee barely hitting 100, let alone their weight. And there's no real pitching there after Roy Oswalt and Wandy Rodriguez. How bad could this get? Could this be like a Pirates-Royals type season?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. I mean, coming into the season, when I did my projections, I had the Astros winning, I think, 72 games, something like that. But that's just because when you run projections, it's almost impossible to show up with a really, really terrible team. Because, as you know, it takes some extra stuff. It takes something extra, something unexpected to lose 95 games or to win on, say, 100. But the Astros, if you show up losing or, you know, winning 72 games and losing, say, 90, it's not a real stretch to go from there to losing 95 to 100 games. That always happens to somebody. It's just hard to figure out who before the season. And the Astros might well be that team. I mean, they're going to hit better than they have, clearly. I mean, just to name one crazy stat, they have 50, their batters have 50 strikeouts and 6 walks. That's impossible to maintain for more than a week or two, let alone a whole season.
That's maybe the most amazing stat. I mean, the walks versus strikeouts. Now, I got an up-close view of the Houston Astros this weekend when the Phillies swept them, and I watched all 3 games, and I started to think, well, how did they think they were going to compete? But obviously, they won't be this bad. They remind me a little bit of last season's Cleveland Indians, a team that maybe I didn't think would contend. Well, I might have actually thought they were going to contend, even without pitching, but I didn't expect them to lose, you know, 95 games. I think they finished worse than the Royals last year. The Astros, I think, are Pirates-like. I think that, you know, and the Pirates are trying, of course. Let's get on the good side here. You wrote a blog at 4:44 a.m. today, and really get some sleep, about the San Francisco Giants. Late night, when I was asleep, you watched Benji Molina hit a 2-run homer, and he knocked in 4 runs, and you're talking about something Mike Kruko said about catchers in Giants history, and it's something that I, frankly, didn't know.
Well, it was a strange thing. I thought on the Giants broadcast, Benji Molina hits the 2-run home run in the eighth, and they suddenly give him this award essentially for tying Bob Brumley for the most RBIs in Giants history, San Francisco Giants history, by a catcher. And it didn't quite ring true, but to me, because it was such a low number, 263. And this is just Molina's first, just his fourth season. Now, granted, his first three seasons were pretty darn good RBI-wise, but just it seemed a little odd to me. And fortunately, prompted by somebody on Twitter who saw something I tweeted, I checked it out, and Molina's not the record holder. He's not really even close. The record holder is
Tom Haller.
A guy named Tom Haller, exactly, who was a real good hitter. Had a lousy defensive rap, but a real good hitter for a catcher in the 1960s. One of the best players, one of the best catchers in the National League, and, you know, he's now forgotten, clearly, but a real good player for a long time.
How good is this Giants team? Because I thought that they got a little short shrift back in the preseason projections, and most people were taking the Colorado Rockies and Los Angeles Dodgers to win the National League West. A lot of people thought Arizona would be a bounce-back team. Obviously, when you send out a rotation of Lincecum, Kane, and a rejuvenated, let's face it, a rejuvenated Barry Zito, his K-per-9 rate is up from previous levels as a Giant, and it's a good bullpen, and they might hit enough. How good can this Giants team be? Can this be a playoff team?
You know, it's one of those things where this is one of those sort of prototypical situations where early in the season I'm tempted to second-guess myself, and this happens every year to me. You know, I preach to everyone, oh, just a week, just 2 weeks, just a month, don't take too much from it. But I do it, too, sometimes. I watch the games. I watch a lot of Giants games because, A, they're on late when I'm around watching baseball, and B, I love their ballpark. I love their uniforms. I love their broadcasting crew. So if it's 7:30, 8:30 on the West Coast and there are two or three or four games left, that's when I'm going to watch it. So I see a lot of Giants games. And I'm tempted to change my opinion of them a week ago and say, yeah, but I can't yet. I was one of those people who didn't think they were good enough, that they wouldn't score enough runs, that their pitching really couldn't be better, let alone even as good as it was last year, because it was so good last year. But, I mean, your argument's pretty compelling. I mean, Lincecum and Kane, there's no reason to think they won't both be really good. Jonathan Sanchez was really good after the All-Star game last year, and you're right. Barry Zito looks pretty good, and he looked really good last night with those striped socks on. I mean, it's a really easy team to root for. I can't quite pick them yet, but we got to watch them, that's for sure.
You know, you're right. I and I'm on the East Coast while you're up in the Pacific Northwest, and I see a lot of Giants and Athletics games too, because, you know, at the 7 o'clock Eastern games, you know, I tend to watch the Phillies and you know, Yankees and Red Sox, teams that, you know, everybody wants to talk about. And so, you know, after midnight, you know, what's on? Dodgers, Athletics, Giants. I try not to watch the Padres, but they did have a nice night last night, scoring 17 runs. Now, I was remiss in not asking you this the last time you were on the show. The Sweet Spot team coverage. Now, you write the Sweet Spot blog, and I check it every day, three or four times a day, to see what you're talking about. You know, Mondays you got the Mendozas, Wednesdays the Wang Doodles, and, you know, all kinds of other stuff and the links and all. But tell us about this, the team coverage here. Because there's a lot of other blogs that you link to that you certainly like and look at, and I do too. I like Crash Burn Alley for the Phillies. I check out that blog quite a bit. Tell us about the team coverage, because not every team, I don't think, is represented, right?
No, we don't have all 30 yet. Obviously, the goal is to get there eventually. We started out with, I think, 7. Last October, we had all the playoff teams except the Rockies, as I recall. And then I spent a good chunk of this winter trying to fill out more of the clubs, and would love to have gotten 30, but you know, just couldn't do it. Right now we're at 20 teams, probably going to add the 21st. I can't say anything yet for sure, but probably the 21st later this week, and then I think we'll just pick them off one at a time. Our model is for people who, and I'm basically one of these people, people who don't follow the NBA a whole lot. ESPN.com has something called the True Hoop Network, which started with Henry Abbott's True Hoop blog. But he built a whole network, the True Hoop Network, which is just fantastic. They've done incredible things over there, and TruHoop is our model, and we hope that the Sweet Spot network looks like TruHoop a year from now.
I hope so, too, because I want to read it. This is the Baseball Today, Tuesday, April 13th, 2010. I'm Eric Carabel. That's Rob Nyer, my guest on today's show. And one other thing that I'd be remiss in not asking you, this was some of the feedback from the last time you were on, and I noticed this, too, and I hope you don't take it personally, but in your blog, sometimes in your writing, you don't like the Philadelphia Phillies. I know you don't like the Phillies, and I wonder, is it because of 1980 when your Royals lost in the World Series? Sometimes you write about the Phillies, and it's kind of and your audience, I think, knows it too in the chats. I mean, they tend to talk about that. You don't really hate the Phillies, do you?
Well, first of all, I will not cop to not liking the Phillies. Now, it may be true. It's possible that I don't, and subconsciously I don't like the Phillies. It's possible. I'm a big believer in the power of the subconscious, and so if somebody else can show me something, I'll buy it. And I will also say this: there were a number of years when I did hold a grudge because of 1980. That's absolutely true. The 80 World Series came when I was 14 years old, and the Royals' first World Series. And I don't know if there was a 14-year-old kid in Kansas City who loved the Royals more than I did. There probably was, but there couldn't have been more than a dozen. So it hit me hard when they lost. But I got over it probably before, if not before, slightly, not long after I started working for ESPN in 1996. So I'm over it. The reason that people think I don't like the Phillies is I always wind up picking against them in, you know, whether they're in the World Series or whether it's the division race. I know that probably I picked the Mets probably 3 years running, and every year the Phillies won. And so people say, well, you must hate. Well, that's just what the numbers said every year. This year, the numbers had the Phillies on top, and so I picked the Phillies to win. Not the World Series, but to win the division. So, and I also say, I love, there's been nobody in the media, I think, who's been a bigger Chase Utley booster than Rob Nyer. So I do have that. I mean, one of the things funny about being a baseball writer is that fans of certain teams, they tend to forget the things you say, you know, positive at their club and remember the negative things. But I love Chase Utley. He's one of my favorite players.
I get that sometimes about the Mets. No matter when I say something nice about that team, they say, oh, you're a Phillies fan. You can't be objective here. I guess and I appreciate, you know, you picking the Phillies to win. That's the division that's really going out on a limb this year. The one of the first, I have a signed picture from Dickie Knowles of him putting George Brett on his hemorrhoids in the World Series.
Oh, so that's the worst thing ever.
That's the best thing ever.
Oh, I'll never forget Dickie Knowles.
Yeah, well, he's a good guy now. He wasn't probably back then, but he's a good guy now, works for the team. I want to ask you about the Mariners because I am not a big believer in you know, clubhouse chemistry. I think, you know, you got good players, they're going to play well, they're going to win. You got bad players, they're not going to win. But Milton Bradley, man, I just can't get over the fact that it took only 1 week into the season for an incident to already happen, and Wakamatsu, the manager of the Mariners, already has had to talk to him. You can't enjoy having Milton Bradley on your team. You're not a Mariners fan, but you see a lot of their games. You can't enjoy having him on your team. Is he bad for the clubhouse? Can that team win despite him?
Well, I think they can win despite him, but I don't think he really helps. I was not high on the Mariners entering the season. I think I wound up picking them third after the Rangers, and I think maybe even the A's, which seemed a little nuts a week ago.
You had the Angels in last?
I think I had the Angels with 79 or 80 wins. I might have, you know what, I might have at the very last second, I might have flipped them around because, you know, they probably deserve a little extra credit for Mike Scioscia.
Okay.
The Angels always seem to exceed their preseason projection, and maybe that's Scioscia, maybe it's luck, who knows, but I might have bumped them up and the A's back to fourth. But not by, or even the Mariners, I can't remember now. But I mean, the thing is, I had them all bunched up based on 80 wins, except for the Rangers, who I had at 85 or 86. So, basic point being, I wasn't high on the Mariners. I didn't like the back end of their rotation, and I didn't like their hitting. And I also didn't like, I wasn't convinced that Milton Bradley was a good fit with them. And not because of the chemistry so much, although that's clearly maybe an issue, but because he's not an outfielder. He's a born DH, at least at this point. Maybe he's a made DH, but he should be a DH. And with Ken Griffey and now Mike Sweeney, they don't have room for a DH. So Bradley's in the outfield. One more place to get hurt. One more place to make gestures toward the fans in left field. I mean, it's just a bad situation.
Yeah, I agree. And didn't he butcher a ball last night that was hit? You know, a couple runs scored on a Roland Smith hit. I mean,
yeah, but you know, the runs would have scored. I tweeted that, and somebody said, yeah, well, the runs would have scored anyway. That isn't the point. The fact that he butchered a ball is an indication of ability or lack of caring. I'm not sure which. He basically overran a line drive, which happens. It's just not a play that you typically see major leaguers make, or in this case not make. And it's the first week of the season, and how many things have already happened? It's just the second week, and I think you're right. I think this is going to blow up in their faces. And you know, the Mariners were really counting on him to give them some punch in the middle of the order. And if he's not there, and probably shouldn't be, but when he's not, then how do they score any runs?
Unless Casey Kochman becomes a slugger. I mean, I wrote a blog that Kochman can knock in 100 runs just because he's batting third. Sure. Not because he's a good player, not because he's a slugger.
No, and he has two guys ahead of him who get on base all the time.
Yeah, 400 on base each guy. I mean, of course he's going to knock. And Rico Bronya knocked in 100 runs twice. But, yeah, they need a slugger. They need a real power hitter. And frankly, I think they would have been better off even with Carlos Silva. Not like the back end of the rotation is that much better than Carlos Silva. But they're going to see how it goes. Milton Bradley, and I'm sure there's going to be incidents, and I'm sure we're going to be talking about them. And, man, always an adventure when it comes to Milton Bradley. Rob, now you'll be chatting today at noon Eastern time. And for those who are listening to the show after that, I'm sure you can find the link on the baseball page. And of course, you can check out his Sweet Spot blog. Anything else on tap for today that you know of in the blog?
A nap. I'm going to nap today. No, I have no idea.
You deserve it.
I have not looked at baseball yet. So, but I will soon.
All right. Well, Rob Nyer, thank you for being a guest here on the Baseball Today, and have a great day.
You too. Take care, Eric.
All right. All right. So Rob Nyer, always a good guest here on the Baseball Today. And, you know, you might think it's odd for me to ask him about this Phillies bias thing, but I knew it was true. We had never discussed that. And look, he gave a great answer. He was. Well, and he says he got over the bias in what did he say? 1990, mid-1990s or something? That's 15 years after the Phillies beat the Royals in the 1980 World Series. We were both kids then. And, well, you know, I enjoyed it. And you know, he shouldn't hate the Phillies because the Royals did win a World Series a few years after Dickie Knowles put George Brett on his hemorrhoids. I love that. Anyway, thanks to Rob Nyer, and check out his Sweet Spot blog. It's always fun. And his chats are always fun, too. And he chats, I believe, every Tuesday. So there. Now let's get to a brief Around the Diamond.
News from around the league.
Let's go Around the Diamond.
All right, Albert Pujols homered again. This just in, he's pretty good. Some injuries to talk about here. Aaron Hill on the disabled list for the Toronto Blue Jays with a hamstring. You know, that's going to derail their season. They were in first place. Then they lose. Come on. I mean, look, it stinks that a guy gets hurt. Phillies lose a couple. One, this is amazing. I'm watching the pregame ceremony here for the Phillies home opener against Washington. And Jimmy Rollins is the last guy introduced because he's the leadoff hitter. And apparently he, like, hurt his calf running, like, out onto the field in the celebration. And the rumor is now he might go on the DL today. That stinks, especially when your backup is Juan Castro. And I wonder, why is Juan Castro leading off? I mean, let Victorino lead off. Anyway, Rollins did not play. Jason Worth left the game early with a hip problem. I would imagine neither are going to be playing on Wednesday, maybe Thursday when I'll be there. But Tuesday, no game for the Phillies. That's good for them. And Cole Hamels, another bad performance. But because the Phillies hit so much and the Washington Nationals don't, Cole Hamels is 2-0, but he's going to have to pitch better than this if the Phillies are going to get to their expectations. Really, he just has to pitch better in October. The first day in the Twins' new park, Target Field, which is really nice, and I'm glad that it was a sunshiny day because the only thing that scares me about this new park in Minneapolis is the weather. Let's face it. You know, it snows in Minnesota. It snows a lot, and it's cold there a lot. Even in April, even in May, certainly if this team is in the playoffs in October, it's not going to be warm out. But it was a beautiful sunshine day, and Joe Mauer did his hitting, Jason Kubel homered, and Carl Pavano out-dueled John Lester, and the Twins get a nice win there, and you can read about what Jim Capel had to say about that that debut in the Twins' new park on ESPN's baseball page. The commissioner says he's not concerned about the slow pace of ball games. By the way, I'm only going to call him the commissioner because I refuse to say his name. Hey, you know what? He's concerned about the slow pace. The umpires need to stop talking about it, for one. You know, would I like the games to be faster? Fine. But at least we have games. I'm happy. And I'm not complaining. Concerned. What are you going to do about the pace? You're going to make Derek Jeter not step out of the batter's box? Are you going to make pitching changes only happen in between innings as opposed to, you know, when there's one out in an inning? You know, that's, I don't know what you're going to do about that. Anything else that's in the news here? Let's see what you wrote down. Milton Bradley is kind of a joke. Look, just stay out of trouble. Just hit the ball, field the ball, run, and stay out of trouble. That's all you need to do, and Seattle can be a contender. If you just hit the way you're supposed to hit, I don't really want to rant, but, I mean, honestly, has this guy not learned at this point? I can't imagine. What would my former co-host call him? A foof? Is that the word he used to use? I mean, really, just you're 1 week into the season. Just hit the ball and stay out of trouble. Other stuff on the field here. David Ortiz got a hit, knocked in a run. He's still struggling mightily at the plate. And I would just wonder if I could ask Terry Francona a question. Why isn't Mike Lowell hitting against lefties? That's my only wonder there. I mean, I realize Ortiz was a former MVP and he's a great player back in the day, but he's really having trouble hitting lefties. You would think that would help him to have a higher batting average and more confidence. And it would help the team because Mike Lowell can still hit lefties. Matt Garza with a nice win against Baltimore. I'm sorry. The Orioles are just, I know the Astros are the obvious worst team in baseball right now, but the Orioles with their schedule in April, they might not win more than 5-6 games. Justin Dukeshire, terrific outing against Seattle, and the A's look very good. They have the pitching. They're like San Francisco. Not enough offense, plenty of pitching, and, you know, I like to see good pitching. And Albert Pujols is good. Most home runs in the first 10 seasons in baseball history. They're going to keep coming up with angles like this. Look, he's great. He's the greatest player in baseball right now, greatest player of this generation, and he might end up being the greatest player of all time other than Babe Ruth. No matter what Albert Pujols does, I'm sorry, and you can argue and send in your emails and do whatever, Babe Ruth will always be the greatest player in baseball ever. Because if you look at some of the home run totals Babe Ruth put up in the 1920s, he out-homered teams easily. He changed baseball. Albert Pujols is a great and awesome player. He's going to set records, and I hope he someday breaks the home run record because I'd like to see that. But he'll never be Babe Ruth. He'll be the second best player of all time if he continues along this path. And I'm sure that's going to generate emails, and good, because let's get some emails. All right, let's just move it on. Call to the pen.
Call to the pen. You've got email.
We do have emails. You can send them at baseballtoday@espnradio.com. And if you're happy or you're sad, whatever the case is, just make it a good email. We'll read it here on the show. Before we get to emails, it's birthday time. And Hunter Pence has turned 27 years old today. That's awesome. And I hope things get better because no team should have to lose every game. No team's obviously going to lose every game. But I don't even think that's the worst team in baseball, and they just haven't gotten a win yet. Hunter Pence of the Houston Astros. Other birthdays today among active players. Steven Pierce, I guess, is still active. Wes Chamberlain, who was on that Phillies 1993 team as a part-time outfielder. I think he platooned probably with Jim Eisenreich in right field, I would guess. The left field platoon was, who was it? It was Incaviglia and Milt Thompson. Mark Leiter's birthday today. Jeff Bittiger, former player. I don't see any Hall of Famers. No Hall of Famers. And the great name of the day, Patsy O'Rourke, who was born in 1881. His birthday's today. All right, your emails. David Swansea. I'm a Red Sox fan living in Western North Carolina. I'm not saying give up on Big Poppy yet, but give him another few series. Why does everyone want Lowell to be the DH or platoon? I swear, I did not read that email before I just railed on Ortiz. I probably should. Why not give Hermita the platoon spot at DH? Jeremy Hermita is destroying the ball so far in the games he's played. Well, he can't destroy the ball in the games he hasn't played, can he? He's hitting over 350 with a homer and some RBIs in just a few games. I would prefer to see the young guy have a chance to hit. He was a first-round pick, wasn't he? Come on, that means nothing. If he bats like he is, slide him into DH for a game after Ellsbury is back from being hurt. All right, well, it's a good email. There's a couple problems with it, obviously. Jeremy Hermita is not going to play over David Ortiz unless David Ortiz is on the disabled list or is just doing so awful at the plate that he has to be benched. And that's not the case. He can strike out 180 times. He's still going to play. Hermita is an outfielder. He's going to play over Jacoby Ellsbury probably for a couple days while he's injured. J.D. Drew never plays a full season. Hermita is going to get playing time. I could see maybe 300 plate appearances out of Hermita this year. Maybe he deserves more. But don't tell me because he was a first-round pick he needs to play more. Have you looked up Jeremy Hermita's numbers? I mean, he didn't do a whole lot as a Florida Marlin, so I don't want to get too excited by the fact that he's off to a great start at the plate. I mean, he's batted 10 times. He's got 4 hits and 10 at-bats. A career 265 hitter. He was supposed to be, you know, all that in a bag of chips. Career high 18 home runs. Never stole bases the way we thought he would. He was supposed to be a batting title guy. he's still only 26 years old, so he could be an everyday outfielder for the Red Sox, but I don't think I'd play him over David Ortiz. Ortiz, for all you say about him, hit 28 home runs and knocked in 99 runs last year, all right? And it's way too early to give up on him. I just say once in a while against a lefty, Mike Lowell would be a better option. That's all. Okay, David and BC. I've always been intrigued by the different strike zones used by umpires and in different situations. So this and the recent uproar Joe West has sparked about the pace of games brings up the question of electronic strike zones. It's not going to happen in our lifetime, but I'm curious what players would think if electronic imaging were used to call balls and strikes. Would some like it and others not? And would it favor pitchers or batters? As a fan, I'm not so sure I'd be like it. I have no problem with long games, especially here on the West Coast, where televised games end 3 hours earlier than the East. But worse, we'd lose the drama caused by all the missed calls from behind the plate. What do you think? I don't think we're ever going to take umpires out of the picture. And you know what? For what Joe West said, and while it was ridiculous and all, I mean, let's not overrate here. I mean, we're not getting rid of umpires. There's a place for them. I like the human angle. I don't mind having replay on home runs, but there's no way you're going to slow up games to an unbelievable crawl if you have, you know, if you check every ball and strike call. You just can't do that, or every play on the bases. I mean, I don't want that either. I don't want electronic strike zones. I don't mind when you're watching TV and you see, they put on the screen, you know, where the ball was it really a strike? I still think a human angle is the best, as long as umpires are unbiased and doing the best job they can, and I have no reason to believe that that's not the case, even with someone like Joe West. And this uproar about long games, look, the commission only said it because he had to deal with it, all right? He's not going to change anything, nor should he. Games are not too long. And baseball is great, so if you have 3 hours and 45 minutes as opposed to, what do you want, 3 hours and 30 minutes instead? It's not that big a deal. Next up, Paul in Pittsburgh, California. I'm on board with your sentiments about Jake Fox. If the Oakland Athletics found 500-plus at-bats for him, fans would forget about Jack Cuss if they haven't already. There's nothing that suggests to me that Fox would put up anything less than a .270 batting average, 25 homers, and 80 RBIs if given a full-time gig. I don't care where he plays, but they need his bat in the lineup. Eric Chavez, looks like the same player he's been the past several years, and $11 million is way too much to pay for a DH that won't produce even average numbers. Their lineup looks a lot better to me with Fox in the five-hole and slotting him only against lefties. Doesn't make any sense when you look at his splits from last season. Billy Bean is way too smart to have traded for him without a plan to use him. Do you think they're letting Chavez play himself out of a job? That's one of the best emails we've ever had here on the show. Paul Rather in Pittsburgh, California, who obviously reads my work because I've been talking about Jake Fox for months. But it goes further than that. It's not just about Eric Chavez and his salary. He's an average hitter. He shouldn't be their DH. But also, Jake Fox's splits. Anybody who took the time to look him up to see what Jake Fox did last season would realize that he had more power against right-handed pitching. He's a right-handed hitter. So he is not a guy to be used in a platoon just against lefties, which is how the Athletics, of course, have been using him so far. Now, I will say this. He's off to a terrible start. He's played in three games, and he's 0 for 11 at the plate. Nary a hit for Jake Fox. He's walked once. He struck out twice. He has no defensive value whatsoever, though he is the team's backup catcher. He has played as a DH twice, though he hasn't started either of those games. And he started behind the plate once, where he had an assist, didn't make any mistakes as far as I know. But he's not really a catcher. I mean, he's a catcher like, remember Carlos Delgado was once a catcher for Toronto. Jake Fox isn't a catcher. But he's got power! And he might hit 250 instead of 270, but look, Oakland won last night, they didn't give up any runs. I don't think they're gonna rock the boat here, but, yes, I think Jake Fox should be playing every day, and I think he would be very good. And you can't really judge a guy off of 11 at-bats. That's the other thing. All right. Eric Chavez, what is he doing so far? I don't think he's doing a whole lot at the plate either. But, yeah, it's a loyalty thing, and he makes a lot of money. He's 5 for 22. 227 batting average, and he has no home runs. And one RBI. So I don't think it's not going to be long before Eric Chavez stops playing. Anyway, those are the emails. Thank you very much. Send them to baseballtoday@espnradio.com. I've talked way too much today, so it's a brief The View from Third.
Almost home.
Taking a look at tonight's matchup.
This is The View from Third.
And honestly, so what if I talk too much? It's like a long baseball game. If you don't want to watch the extra 15 minutes that it takes, then, you know, I guess don't listen. But I think we're giving you good stuff here. A couple day games today, 9 games on the slate, Royals, Tigers, Dontrell Willis on the mound for Detroit. We're always watching that. We're rooting for him personally. Whether he wins or not is kind of immaterial, I think. I mean, obviously the Tigers need him to pitch well if they're going to have a good season, I think. They're off to a good start, and the Royals, but they've won a couple games. They've won 3 more games in Houston. Opening day at the stadium where the Yankees will face the Angels, Andy Pettit on the mound against Irvin Santana. That should be lots of fun. And I'm interested to see, I think it's the ring ceremony there for the World Series winners. And Hideki Matsui back in town. I don't think that's why they chose it this day, but I bet Matsui gets a great ovation. He was the MVP of the World Series against the Phillies. And, you know, maybe they'll even put him in left field today. He's already played left field twice after not playing in the field at all last year for the Yankees. Also on the dock in the American League.
Hey.
Yes?
Have you heard which Hairston played for the Yankees last year?
Jerry?
Yes. He's on a red eye right now going to New York to get his ring and then heading back to California.
Is that right?
Yes.
Padres are off today. So I would say that's not that big a deal for him to be flying back. But yes, Jerry Hairston was a key member of that team, had some nice moments. Now that Jerry reunited with his brother Scott on the Padres, and that's good. You know what? I like seeing that. I remember the Phillies, Pat Burrell. I don't know if he was or wasn't at the ceremony. I don't think he was. Maybe he was. I don't know. Somebody can correct me. But the Phillies won the World Series in 08, and Burrell obviously was a key member of that team. I don't think he made it to the 09 ceremony, but... You know, I'm sure he tried. But yeah, Padres are off today. But that's great. Great stuff there. Jerry Hairston going to be a part of the ceremony. I'm going to watch that. I definitely am going to watch that. So Yankees at home at the stadium. Brian Mattis on the mound for Baltimore against Tampa. It's not going well for Baltimore. 0-4 at home. And frankly, not going to get much better now that Brian Roberts on the disabled list. And it could be a tough season for him. And later on tonight, Brett Anderson, one of the best young pitchers in baseball, young lefty pitcher for the Oakland A's, Brett Anderson, didn't give up a run in his first outing. And the way that Mariners offense hits, he may not give up a run tonight. National League, 4 games on the slate. Ian Kennedy against Clayton Kershaw. That's an interesting matchup. 2 good young pitchers there. Dodgers' first home game after a 2-4 road trip. Bronson Arroyo, Nate Robertson, one of my sleepers this year. He won his first outing. The Mets sent John Main to the mound. Look, I think it's common knowledge now. If the Mets want to contend, somebody other than Yoan Santana has to pitch well. John Main did not pitch well in his first outing. First road game for the Mets. And later on tonight, Matt Cain against Pittsburgh and Paul Mahalan. Anything else that I need to know about today? I don't think so. I think that's pretty much it in baseball for today. So not a full schedule, but a good enough schedule and certainly lots to watch for. On Wednesday's show, I believe we're going to have Mark Simon, the Baseball Tonight researcher, who everybody seems to like, and I like. He's great. He'll be a guest on Wednesday's show, maybe in studio with me in Bristol, Connecticut.
And everyone should know Wednesday shows come out later than normal.
Yes, because of scheduling issues with me. But you know what? It gets up eventually, and you're going to listen. And Mark Simon does a terrific job. So that's your reason to listen, if not for me and the lateness. And it's not that late. I mean, it's not like it comes out at 8 o'clock at night. I don't even know when these come out. I guess you do, but I don't, you know. If you're going to listen.
It varies from day to day.
It varies. I mean, you have a schedule, too, and you do a ton of podcasts, so you can't, you know, I mean, just because the show ends at a certain time, it's not like it gets posted 5 minutes later, but people know where to find it at this point, and obviously since it's, I believe, still doing well on iTunes, I'm told that people are finding it and listening and enjoying it, and I appreciate that. And maybe someday we'll get our boy Seth Everett back in here. He's going to be the Pedro Martinez of this baseball season. He's going to kind of sign mid-season and come and join us on the show. Thanks to Rob Nyer, Royals fan. Always remember 1980. Rob Nyer does a great job here. Check out his chats and his blogs. Thanks to Jay Soderberg behind the glass. I am Eric Carabel. Tuesday's a wrap. We'll be back on Wednesday with Mark Simon.
Thanks for listening to Baseball Today. For more baseball talk, be sure to check out Baseball Tonight, Monday through Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com.
Yeah, that's what we've been looking for.